Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught! Touchdown! Keenan Allen, what a great...
My goal is not to break you, my goal is to make you harder to break.
Comes back, number six! Number six!
Huge sack by Joey Bosa!
Touchdown! 90-yard touchdown!
Picked off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Sets his speed, takes a shot downfield, has night.
Pod touchdown, Chargers!
Grab your lunch boxes and go attack this game with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
And I tell you what, a couple of days out from the first preseason game, the lunch boxes are pretty much full. Defense cooks the Rams with five takeaways. Pipkins, no pads, no practice, brother. A number of Chargers missing out on training with injury concerns. Oh, it's trouble for all Chargers fans. And Herbert's in a moon boot. Guys, welcome to the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast, where three Aussie blokes talk all things powder blue football and occasionally invite an American to join us to bring some security for your listening ears. Today's no exception. I am Andy, as usual, my Southern Hemisphere brethren, Jack and Alistair. And yep. We welcome... friend of the show, you may know him as the host of Bolt Breakdowns from Guilty as Charged. You'll leave today knowing him as the latest victim of the TDU Aussie quiz. Ladies and gentlemen, Alex Instorf.
Yeah. Nice to be here. I'm excited to be on the show. And I'm probably going to be victimized by the Aussie quiz, but I'm okay with it.
Well, look, I mean, most importantly, I'm sure you will have a lot of amazing insights to add. Thanks for getting up absurdly early in your day today and jumping on the show with us as we break down the AFC West opponents and talk a bit of training camp heading into the first week of the preseason. Look, let's start with the biggest elephant in the room. We ain't talking about Jack. Herbert's injury. Justin Herbert's in a moon boot. Sorry, mate. It's just too easy.
Hey, don't apologize. No days off, baby. Don't apologize. That's weak.
Justin Herbert's in a moon boot, guys. He's got plantar fasciitis. Yeah. I'm going to sidestep all of my previous sports physiology kind of background to say it's a real who knows what the severity is. As Harbaugh keeps saying, he's just working through some stuff, but could be 2 to 4 weeks. Alex, I'm going to throw it straight to you, mate. Do you have any insight as to what's going on there? Anything more than the layperson would know?
Yeah, so, I mean... the real answer is we kind of don't know. They said it was an injury to plantar fascia, which could be plantar fasciitis, could just be a small tear, but we ultimately don't know. He's going to be in a boot for 2 weeks, and seemingly they're confident that he's going to come in after that. I know Jeremy Fowler did a report on ESPN where he said they're still not panicked, you know. Does that change in a couple weeks? I don't know. But right now it seems like it's full steam ahead. Unfortunately, practice has been mired in quarterbacks that are not Justin Herbert, and that seems to be the tempo of the situation right now. But as long as you get him back week one, then you know you're feeling pretty okay. My only real like concern is just how does this injury affect him, right? More so than like missing a game, because I do think he will play week one. But does he have trouble planting on that foot? Does he have trouble with his release point as a result of these things, right? Those are more kind of the mechanics that I worry about. But, you know, I'm sure from a pain management perspective, I mean, we've seen Mahomes, you know, get injected at halftime or do whatever. So the, you know, training staff will do whatever they need to do with Herbert in that regard. So I'm not concerned about him missing time. I'm concerned about kind of what he looks like when he comes back, because obviously when we were at training camp and the day before he got injured, right, they were, you know, experimenting with some designed rushing looks for him. You know, he took off and ran himself a couple times as a result of pressure. So those are kind of the things that I'm concerned about him playing in this offense and how he's, you know, feeling more so than, I guess, missing time. But we'll see.
Yeah. Also, I think another question I have is how much time is he missing on the installs being actually out on the field? It seems to me that DJ Chark in his press conference was pretty happy with the chemistry between he and Herbert that they've developed early on. But yeah, it's just a different kettle of fish when you're playing against the Rams, for example, or playing in a preseason game or playing in pads, you know, at tempo with tackling to a point, and what that does, and Herbert's missing all of that. So I do wonder whether that impacts the chemistry we see early, even if he does play as well. That would be something that I'm also just a little bit worried about.
I quite like the humility of Alex there, actually, medical in training. It hasn't stopped every 40-plus-year-old that I interact with online, Chargers fan, saying, I hurt my plantar fascia, where it's Kev Diego. Seems to be a 40-plus-style injury. I haven't met a 40-plus-year-old who hasn't struggled from some form of foot or heel ailment. I might even be going through something similar myself for the time being. But like you had said, Alex, Jack, maybe the question is less about pain, like, is it going to seriously hinder him? Maybe more, does it limit the playbook? Does it limit some of the stuff, you know, getting him outside the pocket, using his feet on designed runs? And we'll just have to wait and see. But in the meantime, it's a steady dose of Easton Stick and Max Duggan and whoever else, Perez, another signed quarterbacks new to the team, Andy.
Yeah, well, the 2023 USFL Championship MVP, Luis Perez, from the Arlington Renegades, just signed on apparently a multi-million dollar deal. So there must be either just, you know, insurance policy, Max Duggan probably not in the window to, you know, fill in if Stick does have to play meaningful snaps at the start of the season. They're just getting some insurance in. But look, I think to what you said, Jack, I think Herbert's out there. We're seeing him out there in the moon boot. But you're right. It sort of does limit how open Greg Roman's playbook can be to start things off. Fingers crossed. It is just a little, you know, it's an isolation of what could be an injury. Alex, you said that you had attended training camp. How was it? What's the feel like at the Bolt?
Yeah, no, the Bolt is like a beautiful facility. Like everybody says, like super nice. You know, people were like, I remember when I went there on Friday, because I had just landed at LAX, took a 5.5 hour flight, and then I was like, oh, I'll go to training camp for a couple hours. And I was like, blind can't possibly be that long. See this line like all the way around the block. I'm like, ugh. Mm-hmm. But you know, people were hyped for training camp. And I think they said there was a capacity of like 1500, but on that back together Saturday, man, I was like, there's like 2,500 or 3,000 like people in here. They definitely let in more people.
That's encouraging. A lot of people would say, well, that's, you know, the limit of Chargers fans across the world, but it's good to see that they're getting down and supporting, checking out the facility and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, it was super cool that, you know, fans came out obviously to it. And just every experience that, you know, people had said from people who had been to training camp in previous years, like that this facility was really nice. And the practice was a little bit obviously different than I expected, because you're kind of just like, you know, boggling your eyes around like whatever you were watching, but there's like a million things to watch. Right? There's like,
especially when you're busy signing autographs too, Alex. It
must be yeah. Very, very busy signing autographs. I made the joke to Tyler. Because the director was also there on like three of the training camp days that I think I was, or no, he was there Friday and Saturday that I was there. And I made the joke that I was like the Tobey Maguire to his like Leo DiCaprio, where like a couple people would come up to me for like a picture or something, but then like everyone and their mother wanted a picture with him. So that was kind of fun. But no, I mean, yeah, like I was saying, there's like a million things to watch on the field that they're doing each time. There's not, you know, as people pointed out, there's not music going on. So you literally hear like Harbaugh bark out the commands for, hey, first unit, second unit, switch, right? Like, you know, or different periods of time where they're walking through 7-on-7. So you get to hear all that stuff, even if you're all the way on the stands and not on the field. So very cool to be able to kind of like see how that works in person, because I feel like I've been talking about training camps or practices for so long without actually ever seeing one in person. So no, it was definitely a really cool feeling. A little interesting kind of, you know, with also the injuries where, you know, you see a player like walk off the field or jog off the field and you're like, is that an injury? Kind of the game we've been playing on Twitter where it's like, is that an injury? And then it's like, oh no, that guy went to the bathroom. It's like, okay.
He's working through yeah. something in the bathroom.
He's working through something.
Last night's Chinese, yeah.
He went through that experience with Rashawn Slater at one point. But, you know, so I think it was just, you know, fun to be at camp, fun to, you know, see people around and see, obviously, the excitement around the team. But, you know, it was interesting to see how they kind of navigated practices and what they would practice, I guess, each day. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Very envious. Would love to be able to go to a live game, let alone training camp. Join scrimmage with the Rams. Al, I'll throw over to you, my man. What are some of your takeaways from that
right
experience?
Yeah. So it was kind of, you know, it's kind of like glass half empty or glass half full, depending on how you look at it, because the Rams were also missing three of their offensive linemen, which, you know, I pointed out in the podcast I did with Tyler. So it's like, I don't know if that's, you know, how it goes down in a, you know, full strength game between these teams, obviously. But I did think it was noteworthy that the secondary looked, you know, a little bit more connected. And, you know, you saw that play. Even the Chargers posted on Twitter where, you know, Derwin James knocks down the ball, I think, against Puka. And then Asante Samuel Jr. is right there, toe tapping on the sideline and kind of knows where to be, right? And that's part of this, you know, Jesse Minter read and react defense. Just knowing where to be is a crucial part of it. So it was nice to see that from the secondary. Obviously, Christian Fulton, who I think I had questions about entering this training camp, has been balling out. I know he had multiple interceptions, I think, in that Rams practice and a couple this week. So, yeah, it's been nice to see that they've been able to be in the positions to create turnovers, right? Because, again, we're not going to see anything that's, you know, special in the playbook, right? Even in this, in these preseason games, you know, until week one. But just that the players kind of know where to be depending on, like, the defensive formation, that's really what you want to see. And I do think so far the defense has been, you know, cleaning up at some of these practices, which is nice to see for a unit that I had a lot of questions. Now, how does that, you know, change when it's full speed and they don't get to go against Easton Stick and Max Duggan on their own team? I don't know. But so far, it does seem like the team as a whole just has a lot better of an attitude, I would say, with defense and just being in the right positions at the right time.
Mm. And I'm more than happy to have a change of opinion when I'm presented with different facts. I think hopefully it's a good lesson for everybody. Don't just stick to your view and become entrenched if you see new things and hear new things. And one thing I have to acknowledge is defensive player after defensive player after defensive player in press conferences are saying loudly or impliedly that they like this defense a lot better. Mm. They're not having to think. It's not as complicated. They can play off instincts. They know what's expected of them. The coaches are very detail-oriented and teach really well. All of that is some kind of indictment on the Brandon Staley regime and his underlings. We will see, as you said, Alex, what it looks like in practice, because I think maybe another episode will go into some of the intricacies between the Minter scheme and the Staley scheme. There are some similarities in terms of some of the coverages on the back end. Right. But one difference is Minter's more likely to play a true zone without the pattern match element. So he's not asking his defensive backs to go from zone into man depending on the route alignment and distribution. It's here's your zone, and if a receiver moves into a different zone, that's okay, you just let it go. What that lets you do is play really fast. You don't need to think as much. But what we also need to keep in mind, I think, is we've been in a simple zone scheme in the past with Gus Bradley. Those schemes do have weaknesses, and it's a reason why the Vic Fangios of the world created, and Saban created Pat Match, because when you face really good quarterbacks and you're just playing simple zone coverages, you might see a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning throw for 375 yards, three touchdowns, no picks, because they know where the soft spots are in that zone. You are more reliant on great athletes playing fast in those systems. But at least early in the season, it all sounds really good. And as you said, Alex, Christian Fulton, like you, I was a bit dubious. Is this really a starting quality cornerback in the NFL at this stage of his career? He's had 4+ interceptions through training camp and he's kicking ace. So good on him. Jack, I'll throw a question to you, man. We've talked a bit about the defense. Are we concerned at all about the offense. There have been a few injuries, guys like from, we've mentioned Herbert, but McConkey, Pipkin, Sawlia, Kamani Vidal, Donald Parham. These are all guys who've spent significant periods of time off on the sidelines. How are you feeling about the offense at this stage?
It definitely feels like the defense have come out with more social media worthy plays, and there's a lot more hype around them than the offense, purely because the offense is led by Easton Stick, and we know what Easton Stick can give us, or, and also probably more importantly, what he can't give the Chargers, and that's a accurate passing game. You know, it'll be fascinating to see the, as I did mention it with Herbert not being on the field, the chemistry that he's got with guys like McConkey. Yeah, Slater's been in and out. Parham not being in the tight end room. Mind you, though, I'm not sure not having Parham there, I don't think is a huge issue. I did actually listen to Will Disley's press conference, and that was fascinating as well. And it feels to me like that position group that I remember when we did our preseason or our season previews, that perhaps we weren't particularly happy with that in terms of what it's been in the past. But that could just be a really important keystone into unlocking the running game with Herbert out. Because if Easton Stick's going to use his legs a lot, we're going to be in heavy personnel, I think, quite a lot. We're going to be needing to move the ball in different ways. So to hear Disley talk about it, he's very eloquent. And he did note that Roman's scheme does benefit guys like him because he prides himself on blocking, and he's a blocking tight end. So the smash mouth, we might see a lot of smash mouth football early if Herbert doesn't play. But I'm expecting a heavy dose of smash mouth football against the Seahawks on Sunday, our Monday. Mm. So, yeah, be fascinating to see how it all falls apart. I'm not going to say that. Falls out, let's say that. I'll say that.
Comes together if you want to be positive. I'm just going to flip the script on you guys a little bit, because we do want to get into the AFC West, but I think now's a perfect opportunity to just to go quickly around the horn with what we're sort of expecting or hoping to see in week one of the Seahawks game. I'm going to kick it off by looking at who they're going to play. We're talking about guys who are available. We obviously don't have everyone that we'd like to, but you know, just the recognition, the experience, and the importance that the coaches view getting these guys into, you know, full speed or thereabouts simulation, this new scheme and system, who actually they pad up and play meaningful minutes. Alistair, what do you think, man?
Yeah, like you, I want to know how many starters actually get time. We know under Staley that was not a hallmark. Rest the starters was his mantra. Is Harbaugh a little more old school, as it were, that he wants to harden these vets? Specific players, I'm quite keen to see the two young cornerbacks, Cam Hart, Taheeb Steele, even some of the lesser known guys, Thomas Harper, and some of the other players vying for the third safety spot. I'll be watching those guys. And on the offensive line, I'm keen to see players like Alex Leatherwood, who we've heard not much about. They should get plenty of snaps. So I think offensive line, defensive backs, two things I'll be watching for against the Seahawks. What about you, Alex?
Yeah, I'm curious to see how they work the offensive line a little bit, because they're dealing with a number of injuries right now. Obviously, Pipkins, I don't know if he's going to play. I think he returned to practice yesterday. Salier has been out for, you know, a week plus, and they're just feeling a bunch of injuries kind of down the depth chart as well. I think Greg Roman was asked by Steven at the press conference about Alex Leatherwood and Foster Sorrell, that swing tackle battle. And then, you know, if Alex Leatherwood ends up playing guard snaps, right, because that's something he did when he was in Chicago. Is that something that they feel like they want to show him, you know, with him here in order to potentially be able to make the roster? You know, we'll see, because I don't know if that's a roster lock yet, but if he has more flexibility, then that can certainly become one. I'm excited just to see guys hitting people. I know Dion Henley talked about this in his press conference yesterday, but there was a play where, you know, Easton Stick in practice yesterday, mentioned by Popper, dumped off the ball to Stone Smart, and Dion said he had a chance to basically blow him out, right? And like really put his shoulder in there, and he didn't, because that's not how Harbaugh wants the guys to play. So this is their first real chance to play fast, you know, physical football, as the coaching staff says, in this new setting. you know, not regular season football, but still it is the first chance for a lot of these guys, I think, to kind of show what they have in the scheme. And, you know, Jesse Minter even said it himself, like there's going to be some undrafted free agent that we're going to be talking about a week from now. Right. And he specifically mentioned, I think it was Tre'Mon Morris Brash, the edge, who's, you know, competing for a roster spot there. So he'll be a name to watch. But yeah, just in general, excited to see some of these younger guys kind of compete for roles, even if a lot of the starters aren't playing. And then, yeah, like Andy said, which starters play is kind of the question mark right now, because you don't have as many vets on this team as in previous years, where it would just be like, okay, Keenan Allen and Mike Williams are not going to play in the preseason, right? I don't think we'll see, obviously, like Mac or Bosa, right, on this version of the team. But which ones play in terms of, yeah, both from an injury standpoint and both from, you know, I guess where this coaching staff views those guys talent-wise. That's kind of what I'd be watching for there too.
Now, Jack, you got to tell us who you're looking forward to watching and why is it Isaiah Spiller?
I'll get to Isaiah Spiller first, but my mind immediately went to whether these two play a couple of snaps together. I'd love to see the middle of the field. I'd love to see Colson and Henley. Colson's working through some stuff, I'm pretty sure, at the moment. So
yeah, he's returning from his
And I'd like to see that maybe later in the preseason. It might not eventuate. Henley, I thought he balled out in the preseason games last year. I don't know what. I know he was working through some injuries last year that weren't really aware of, or at least I wasn't. But yeah, the interior of the defensive line, it'd be fascinating to see what the hierarchy is there. Who's going to get, is Big Puna going to get some snaps, or is it going to be some of the lesser guys? And I'll put my hand up and say that I wasn't a fan of the Aboigbe pick, but I'll be happily eating my humble pie if he comes out and plays half decently, if he gets some snaps. And yes, Isaiah Spiller, my boy, the guy that I'm hoping does really well because I put so much time and effort defending him. Isaiah Spiller, run hard, son, run hard.
All right. A lot awaits, and it won't all just be sort of scripted out for foresight in week one of the preseason, but hopefully it sets the benchmark. We know what, you know, not tackling during training camp did to the start of Chargers seasons in years gone by. So let's, you know, like we pointed out, let's hope we're hitting hard as soon as the whistle blows. All right, Jack, the Chargers face the Las Vegas Raiders in both week one and week 18. Take it away, my man.
All right, I've put a couple of things together for you. First off the bat is a little something I put together with the help of AI, and then we'll get rolling. So listen to this one, boys.
Raiders ain't shit, we know the game. West Coast battle, they the same. Vegas likes but no damn fame. Chargers hit him, body slain. Bosa wrecking every play field. Silver, black, seen yellow to the yield. Lightning strikes, still ain't concealed. Raider cries, we don't care if they heal.
Oh, what was that? Oh, I was just in some weird fever dream with some crazy popular music about. Al was leading his toupee around like a dog barking, and Tom Brady was shoving strawberries up his... Anyway, where was I? Ah, yes, Las Vegas. Fear and loathing and the Raiders in Las Vegas. The Raiders offseason is a cocktail of catastrophe. A veritable grab bag of chaos, if you will. Picture this. Gardner Minshew's shadow casting doubt over Aiden O'Connell. Trade rumors swirling around Devontae Adams. The Kermit the Frog doll mocking Mahomes. A ludicrous attempt at relevance. The trunk of this nightmare is filled with dysfunction. McDaniel's disastrous team meetings last year. Hobbs and Bennett's training camp brawls. Brady's controversial ownership stake. A swirling maelstrom of instability. It's like a trunk packed with two bags of shattered quarterback dreams, 75 nuggets of front office confusion, five sheets of Trade rumor frenzy, a shaker full of defensive incompetence, and a galaxy of off-field distractions, plus a court of coaching failures, a case of locker room discord, a pint of PR disasters, I don't know why I'm going Irish, but I am, and 24 legal ambiguities, and 10 grams of general management that can't build a roster. FTR, more like TFR, Tom times 2, S the Raiders. Anyway, Hemingway once said, the most essential gift for a good writer is a built-in, shockproof shit detector. That is the writer's radar, and all great writers have had it. So, I leave you with this. Where is your shit detector on the 2024 Raiders? Time for some more medication.
He's just heard the South Park Blame Canada from last week and goes, right, the die is cast. I'm going to have to lift my game here and lift your game. You did, Jack. I love how every accent you do seems to hail somewhere from the deep south. It doesn't matter if it's Josh Allen somewhere out in Buffalo or Las Vegas. It all ends up the same.
Wasn't a particularly good, Hunter S. Thompson, but, you know, you'll take it.
It was good. It was very good. My bullshit raider.
I think it was Irish Johnny Depp, personally.
It's a little bit like that.
So, bullshit raider. Well, I think we're pretty keenly attuned to bullshit as Chargers fans who have had to sit and listen to press conferences from our former GM, who, of course, now is the GM of the Las Vegas Raiders. And I have noticed Tom Telesco's got an early penchant for trying to pick up ex-Chargers. The Raiders have signed Jalen Guyton, Keelan Doss, Terrell Bynum, all of these names that you saw flying around during training camp. They're not our problem anymore. They've gone off to Las Vegas. Looking at the kind of off-season they've had, one thing that's interesting to me is the key decision they made in the draft, which was not to take any kind of quarterback of the future, despite it being a strong quarterback class. They've decided they want Gardner Minshew or Aiden O'Connell. Reports from training camp is neither has really seized the job and the play's been fairly bad. Instead, they decided to attack the shiny things. We're used to seeing that. They've gone Brock Bowers, Jackson Powers-Johnson. They signed Christian Wilkins on a very big contract in free agency. And they've delayed their quarterback decision until sometime in the future. So I might direct a question to you straight off the bat, Alex. This kind of roster building strategy that they're employing, what do you think about it? Do you think they have erred by not just grabbing a quarterback when they picked at 12 or wherever it was? Or do you think that this roster's looking pretty good with a strong offensive line and defensive line?
Yeah, so I guess it depends on which quarterbacks we're talking about, right? Because obviously there were discussions other teams had about trading up. Doesn't seem like the Raiders had many of those conversations. So then it's like, okay, well, are you left with kind of like Bo Nix potentially, like in that spot? I'm not necessarily the highest on him, but you know, the theory is if you take a quarterback, that's like a poker chip, you know, for future seasons and trying to kind of get that rookie contract that really hits, right? Me and Steven were talking about this the other day, but we kind of love their defensive roster. Like it's kind of really good, right? If they had the quarterback to kind of drive this offense. But yeah, that's really where it kind of ends and finishes the conversation. I'm not the lowest on Gardner Minshew because I think he, you know, showed last year he can basically do like his game manager type thing, right? Where he's not going to turn over the ball very much and kind of be like a, you know, C-tier version of like Baker Mayfield, which isn't very good, but like, you know, just kind of controls the tempo and all that stuff. Aiden O'Connell, I think, is a mess. I don't really have never understood the upside that other people have seen there. But, you know, this is a team that I think has enough pieces to basically stay competitive in games, almost kind of regardless of their quarterback situation. But the quarterback situation is obviously the limitation for why they won't go further, especially in an AFC that's kind of loaded with quarterback talent.
Yeah, I think really interesting to ride with like a real basic kind of QB. You've only really got to be accurate to allow your weapons on this offense to succeed. If you've seen the receivers show, just how Devontae Adams magics himself open every single time. And, you know, Jimmy G would overthrow him, miss. There's unrest there. Really interesting not to go to a quarterback. I think the guy's turning 32, or he could be turning 33. Like, he's at the back end. You're essentially setting yourself up as an offense to run permanent 12 personnel because you've spent the last two first-round picks on tight ends. And the defense, I completely agree with you, Alex. It's it could be one of the best defensive lines in the league. Max Crosby, John Jenkins, Christian Wilkins, it's fantastic. I love their linebacker group as well. Their cornerbacks have just found a way to play a cohesive team secondary defense as well. So they definitely have the ability to stay competitive. You know, we can't try and slash too many tires in the dark because 63 to 21. Like, you know, we're talking with lemon in our mouth and we're sour as because that still really hurts. But
does it hurt?
Yeah, dude, we got thrashed by the Raiders. It was like 42-0 at halftime. I don't know about you.
It kind of led us to here though.
Like, yeah, depends if you were rooting for them to win that game or not.
Right. Yeah, what, the Chargers or the Raiders?
I
never rooted
the Chargers.
where the situation was.
Look, yeah, it wasn't just, you know, I mean, look, it was, that's a fair point, you know, it was in the 7-5 pick mark, and, you know, maybe if we'd picked 7, we wouldn't have got Joe Alt. All of that's yet to unfold and be seen, but yeah. I'm far too passionate and proud to ever not root for my team and to be okay and not hold that against an opposition that we annoyingly play twice a year, and Tom Telesco is the GM there. So
the way that they're building their front office is interesting. The rehiring or the hiring of Antonio Pierce after he comes in as the interim coach after McDaniel's second and utter failure, that'd be the last time I think we see him in a head coaching position. Mm. It'll be fascinating to see if Pierce can keep the locker room together, because he kind of took over from a situation, was able to bind the locker room in some way, being an ex-player himself. It'll be interesting to see if he's got the toolkit, for lack of a better term, to keep a season going through the ups and downs through a full, you know, 18, 19 weeks. Tom Telesco comes in now as the experienced GM, which is very bizarre to say. And the way that Tom Telesco works, we've seen him go through head coaches like I go through hamburgers sometimes. You know, Antonio Pierce, Tom Telesco, is that an interesting pairing? I'm not too sure. But we know that Al Davis is volatile. We know that they want to be relevant in Vegas. We know how much of a loudmouth Adams is after the receiver show.
Mark Davis. So Al's not doing much with the team at the moment.
Sorry, Mark Davis, I should say. I was still stuck in the fever dream of leading his toupee around. Yeah, Al Davis not doing much. So it's just interesting. And I just have this feeling that Gardner Minshew is going to pop up and really annoy me in a game, whether it's week one or week 18 away. Gardner Minshew has something that, as you pointed out, Alex, is kind of sea level. But, man, given the opportunity and knowing us as Chargers, he'll just have a lights out game against us and we're going to be... Yeah, highly annoyed, but we'll wait and see.
All right, Jack, result predictions?
I reckon we win week one, and I reckon we lose week 18.
Okay. Al, Lister.
No, I'll be more positive. This is the year we go 2-0 against the Raiders. I think Jim Harbaugh will bring all his experience to bear against a younger Antonio Pierce in their quarterback situation. So I have us going 2-0 against the Raiders. Alex, what about you this year?
I'll say they win week one, and then who knows, week 18, who's playing?
Hey, resting starters. I love it.
Yeah. I mean,
that was my philosophy.
Right. Or even who knows who's injured at that point, because, you know, if you would have said that last week would have been Easton, or last year, it's like, yeah, you get the schedule and it's like Herbert Mahomes. Ooh, that's going to be awesome. And then it's Stick versus, I forget who even started for the Chiefs last year off the top of my head. But, you know, so that's always a potential thing in week 18.
Yeah, I'm going to be on the affirmative and say a 2-0 tie to the Chargers. No timeouts in overtime. It won't even get to overtime. We'll win this battle. On that note, over to the aforementioned Kansas City Chiefs. No Hunter S. Thompson or other literary snags from me. I'll leave that up to Jack and Al. I need not boost this team any higher, really, than they always find themselves at season end. Another Super Bowl win, ultimately the benchmark of the playoffs performances for the last 4 or 5 years. Nothing too grandiose as far as player influx over the offseason. But, you know, they have added a couple of wide receivers, which has definitely strengthened this part of the team. Marquise Hollywood-Brown and first-round pick Xavier Worthy. He was a true wide receiver one at Texas, even with A.D. Mitchell alongside him. So that really, you know, lifts up and doesn't rely too much on Butterfingers, Kadarius Toney, or any of the other kind of drop artists, if you will. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, kind of glad he didn't end up at the Chargers. But he goes to Buffalo, where, you know, they couldn't buy a wide receiver if they were paid to do so. There's also great development of younger guys like Sky Moore and Rashee Rice. Offensive line for me, though, is an interesting point. If you look back at the Tampa Bay Super Bowl 55, they lost that game, I believe, because they couldn't protect Patty Mahomes. And their left tackle situation as it stands, even left guard to start the season, Donovan Smith remains unsigned. Now, he's still a chance to return to Kansas City, but wasn't really a great 2023 for him. Gave up 53 pressures and 3 sacks. So in steps, on paper at the moment, Wanya Morris. He was a third-round pick from Oklahoma. He did start a bit last year, struggled in pass protection. Joe Tooney, All-Pro, of course. He's been a great footballer, but did suffer that pectoral injury in the divisional win at Buffalo and missed the Super Bowl. So he's still not back in the fold just yet. So, you know, it's a weakened left side, and we've got to cling to something, any opportunity to get at this Chiefs team. Creed Humphrey, fantastic center. Juwan Taylor, second worst season per PFF since his sophomore campaign with Jacksonville. And they draft Kingsley Suamataya from BYU. So he does have a prototypical or a great size for the tackle position, but obviously, you know, lack of experience, and it could be a trial by fire for him. Moving forward, look, on the defensive side of ball, some big numbers across the front seven, 15 sacks each to Chris Jones and George Karlaftis. Then you've got the backup or the auxiliary cast of Mike Dana and Charles Omenihu with 8 sacks each, and you're getting sacks from each of the linebackers too. What I want to know, Alex, I'm going to ask you this question. Do you think, and because we've seen it in the past before, do you think that the team got more than they bargained for production-wise from Drew Tranquil and in 2023? And do you think that they can, with the loss of Willie Gay, we'll get into the secondary shortly, but do you think that they can get as much sort of production from that that middle of the defense like they did last year?
Yeah, unfortunately, I really like the Chiefs defense, which sucks for us. But yeah, no, they have Drew Tranquil, and Nick Bolton played a top, you know, 10 linebacker in football last year. He's been really solid throughout his whole career. And then they still have depth at that position, too. But, you know, and also like their secondary is unfortunately still kind of what it is. The Chargers like weren't kind of able to take advantage of when the Chiefs defense kind of wasn't that great. And now they have Trent McDuffie, who I feel is like a top 50 player, frankly, like in the NFL as a whole. And Chris Jones and everybody on the defensive line that's been mentioned. But it kind of feels like the offense, like you mentioned, with the offensive line could take, you know, a small step back this year. You know, I think there are legitimate questions about like Juwan Taylor and what they're doing at left tackle. But how much does it matter if then they get a boost from their defense? So, and also Mahomes and Kelsey and everyone else is still there. So I'm not concerned about the Chiefs from their standpoint. I still ultimately think they finish probably first in the division. If we're kind of in that wild card contention type as a team this year. But, you know, I just kind of think this is the benefit of drafting really well. And this is kind of what I think a lot of those Tom Telesco teams have missed over the years, where, you know, you don't kind of have the depth to replace guys that walk in free agency or, you know, something like that. Like you mentioned with Willie Gay, right? The Chiefs, it's kind of next man up. And that's kind of been an issue with, say, the Chargers for years. So I think that's kind of the type of roster building that now Joe Ortiz will try to have in place here in the Chargers.
You've also got Dave Spagnuolo, who just seems to manufacture greatness out of whatever sort of befalls him. Interested, like, they do have 1,260 snaps of Legarius Sneed, who's got obviously gone to the Titans, and over 800 snaps of Mike Edwards. Just so happens those two guys were two of the top four defensive backs in missed tackles last year. But they brought in a couple of guys that I looked at in the draft sort of set up in Jaden Hicks. He led his team at Washington State with 63 tackles over the last two seasons and is in the 90th percentile for a run stop percentage. So it really kind of, it seems to be a little bit of a educated sort of move by drafting these kind of guys to, you know, to grow. And that's exactly what you've just said about drafting and developing and sort of making the drop off a lot less sort of blunt.
Whenever I think about what the Chiefs are doing, I picture the meme of Jesse Pinkman in Breaking Bad just going, they can't keep getting away with this. It's just every single year. And for me, I looked at the problem last year, and you mentioned it, Andy, most drops in the NFL with 34. And what do? They bring in Xavier Worthy, Hollywood Brown, who we didn't mention. Last year, Pat Mahomes on deep attempts, so attempts of 20-plus yards, he was 2 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. So they've suddenly added these two guys who can attack down the field. I hear what you're saying, Andy. Apparently, Kingsley Suamataia has got getting first-team reps. He's beaten out Wanye Morris for the job. Last year, they struggled a bit in terms of getting pressure on the quarterback, but what is Mahomes' magic skill? He's the master of sack avoidance. He was second best in the NFL. Only 10.5% of pressures on Mahomes become sacks. 1 out of 10. It is so frustrating to watch. You always see he just manages to get out of the grasp, get the throw off, either hit Kelsey, who's uncovered against zone, or this year he'll probably just launch it deep to one of those two speedy guys. So they look pretty good. Jack, I'll bring you into the discussion before our game review and our predictions. But is there anything you're seeing that leads you to think that, you know, this is the year they take a step back, or are you just expecting more of the same?
More of the same. Continuity in the front office, continuity on the field. I know that we've said that maybe the interior of the offensive line is a bit so-so. Fifth round, a guy that I really liked, and I don't think the Chiefs pick people just for bodies. Hunter Norzad,
out of Penn State. Yep.
Great, huge man in terms of size.
Steve Hagelin loved him too.
Yeah, not particularly tall, but in terms of size and weight, he's in the 90th percentile. So I would expect maybe you wouldn't expect Creed Humphrey to go down. But if he does, he might be getting snaps, not only at center, but if Tooney is not healthy, and depending on what's going on at right guard, I wouldn't be so far to see him playing first team snaps. Just another guy that they get that could turn into some sort of weird all pro like Creed Humphrey. Pick him up, you know, Creed Humphrey, 63, pick 63. Oh yeah, best center in the NFL. Okay. So I don't know where the weakness is on this team. It feels like they've been able to not just botch over and sort of give a sticky tape, put a sticky tape over it, a sticking plaster, but they've been able to strengthen it. They've been able to stitch things up. And Mahomes as well has been, you know, played most of the back half of last year injured. So we're going to see another healthy Mahomes, which is ludicrous when you think about it. This team's going to be very good.
Yeah, we also haven't mentioned the punting hair, Tommy Townsend departing. And who do they bring in? Matt Araiza. With like a booming kick. It's just another one of those.
Let's leave that alone.
Like,
they also bring the Chiefs. The Welsh Rugby Union star as well. Reece Samet.
The Chiefs tend to bring in some let's just call them interesting character people. Rashee Rice has been in the, you know, in the news about speeding and things, but hey, I'm not going to criticize the people that they get in because they win. So win at all costs, baby.
Yeah.
I thought you were teeing yourself up for some Harrison Butker chat there with the big extension.
I was.
Funny tweet that, you know, celebrated with his wife cooking him a nice dinner.
You know what? I'm going to steer clear of that one.
Okay. All right. Yeah, save the segment, Andy. Who's winning Chiefs Chargers?
I don't know if this will save the segment, but as positive as I was about the Raiders, I'm not so much with the Chiefs. I think we go 0-2 against the Chiefs in the two contests this year. And I think it's just, I'm expecting to see improvement over 5-12 for the Chargers. But I think this will just be in what is a pretty relatively easy schedule throughout the season. I think this is just a bit of a re-awareness that we've still got a bit of a way to go and we're not quite at that championship level. So it's okay. 0-2 though, sadly.
I am going to go. The Chiefs have a very interesting run before they meet us. They go Broncos, Bills, Panthers, Raiders, Chargers for Sunday night football. So I'm going to go, we're going to lose week 4, but we're going to win on Sunday night football in the bright lights. So I think we're going to go 1-1. We're going to win away. We're going to win at Arrowhead. I think I'm going to be an optimist there. There we go.
Okay. Alex?
Yeah, I could be convinced for 0-2 or 1-1. I mean, even when we saw, you know, the Chiefs didn't play the best against a very similar Minter scheme in that Ravens AFC Championship game, right? They kind of just like did enough to be able to win, but it's a challenging scheme for them, and you know, one that plays to even the Chargers' like perceived lack of talent. And we saw Staley go in his, you know, rookie season and take a game in Arrowhead. So I think it's doable if you get, you know, good enough defensive performance and a good enough offensive performance. I'd probably lean towards 0-2, but you know, I don't think it's impossible for them to get a game. Jack, I thought it was just interesting that you leaped directly into Matt Araiza, but drew the line at Harrison Butker.
Yeah, I almost got put on the thing. I left all my dirty laundry in the massage parlor when we were talking about the Browns, and I wasn't going anywhere other than the guy can kick a football.
Hilarious.
I sort of, Matt Araiza has some, I didn't say anything. I just said, listen, they have questionable people. And I was like, Harrison Butker's low hanging fruit as such. So anyway, but you're right. Good call.
All right. I'm with you, Andy. We're simpatico for the time being. 0-2. First year, I've got a lot of faith in Harbaugh, but I do think the Chargers really had to shed a lot of dead weight, and the roster is probably not quite as good. It's maybe a year away. The Chiefs are primed to be amazing this year. So 0-2 for me. All right. Last of our division rivals, before we hit Alex with our TDU Aussie quiz, let's first talk about the Denver Broncos, who the Chargers will face away in week 6 and then at home in week 16. So what did our Denver Bronco rivals do last year? They got off to a very slow start. They were 1-5 with losses to the Raiders, Commanders, Dolphins, Jets, Chiefs. You may recall they had that shocking 70-point concession to the Dolphins in week 3, allowing 726 yards and 10 touchdowns. Their defense was the worst ever measured by DVOA through 5 games. After that slow 1-5 start, they did rally. They got back to 7-7. Sean Payton, Russell Wilson, they found their feet a little bit. But then you might recall they had a shocking Christmas Eve loss to the New England Patriots. And that virtually ended their season. They finish 8-9. They cast Russell Wilson astray. I query, was he really the problem? Because looking into some of his deeper metrics, just watching him, he had periods where he's definitely played a lot better than he did when Nathaniel Hackett was the coach. I still thought he was somewhere in the middle of the pack of starting quarterbacks last year, so they cast him aside. Obviously, they draft Bo Nix, who Sean Payton's already begun with his comparisons to Drew Brees. That was as predictable as anything, of course. And they've decided to go, it's either him or Jared Stidham who's going to start early on in the year. Alex, I'll throw this to you. I feel like the defense for the Broncos has kind of got off scot-free because they've always prided themselves on playing really hard defense. But last year, they did not have a single defensive player who graded higher than 75 per PFF. Baron Browning was about 74. And Vance Joseph's defense really has struggled. He's got a high blitz rate, but if you look at all of the stuff like pressure rate, coverage, yards, points, they were really bad last year. What do you think about that kind of side of the ball? Is there any hope for this Vance Joseph defense, or are they destined to fail again this year for that same reason?
Yeah, I just think they're kind of in this position where the scheme is kind of built for a team that has a little bit more like high-end defensive talent than they do. And like outside of like Pat Surtain, who I like, and DJ Jones, it's just like they don't really have a guy that you can kind of like count on. They ended up trading for John Franklin Myers from the Jets. But overall, I kind of like their linebacker group, but just as a whole, their defense is a little underwhelming, just kind of like we were talking about the Chiefs, right? The Chiefs draft these guys and are kind of able to get replacements, and it feels like the Broncos for a couple of years now just have not drafted optimally defensively down the draft, you know, after the first round. So that's kind of where I think their defense is at this point, and you feel sort of the strain of that on the team. So they don't have a ton of guys that I think are just kind of like ready to step up in the way that certainly Kansas City has. So I think it's an all right, you know, defense. I don't think they're going to be, you know, giving up 70 points to Miami again, hopefully from that standpoint for them. But yeah, it's just not a group that has a lot of high-end talent. And that's where I think you need kind of someone like the Chargers have, like a mentor, where it's like, okay, we're going to kind of find ways to manufacture pressures despite not having the greatest interior. We're going to kind of find ways to do these things. I don't think that's really what Vance Joseph kind of, I guess, is the best at.
I totally agree. And again, that they've got unlucky. I think they've tried to do a Kansas City Chiefs-esque move. So they allowed Josie Jewell to leave. And unfortunately, the guy who is supposed to assume that mantle, Drew Sanders from Arkansas, poor guy tears his Achilles in OTA. So he's likely to miss the whole season, which is a shame. You never like to see that. All right. Flipping over, Jack, I'll let you get in. Flipping over to the other side of the ball, I want to throw one data point at you and why Sean Payton and Mike might feel comfortable with Bo Nix instead of Russell Wilson. So last year, Russell Wilson had the fifth worst pressure to sack rate in the NFL. 20.6% of pressures became sacks. Only people worse than that were Bryce Young, Zach Wilson, Sam Howell, Desmond Ridder. Not a great cast of quarterbacks. And he was under pressure a lot, but he had the second slowest time to throw in the entire NFL. They bring in Bo Nix. His strengths, he avoided negative throws as well as any college quarterback. His grade under pressure was 91. He was the 100th percentile for avoiding negative plays. Very low air yards, but very good adjusted completion percentage. So very accurate, gets the ball out quick. What do you reckon?
Oh, clearly it's Drew Brees, right? Like, it's got to be. Clearly it's Drew Brees. Yeah, listen, clearly Russell Wilson believed he was still Russell Wilson Seahawks from a number of years ago. There was obviously tension between him and Peyton. Peyton made it fairly clear throughout the season that this was a test to see if you can fit my offense. And that obviously led to Russell Wilson moving on. Listen, I don't know enough of Bo Nix to make any judgments. He's a quarterback that I didn't really look at as much as I would have, as I did some of the others. But, you know, you look at Sutton, I still think is a fantastic wide receiver given his size and his ability. Josh Reynolds, so-so. Marvin Mims has got speed. The tight end room is so-so. Bowles at left tackle, Powers. Then you got one of my favorite is Quinn Miners there. And you got Mike McGlinchey, who's, you know, been off and on. I just don't know. I really don't know with this team where they're going to go. I think they're going to finish fourth in the division. And I'm not sure if anyone's looked in to see if Sean Payton and George Patton are the same person, because their names look extremely similar. They're just sort of, I know Sean puts on a mustache and goes, yes, I'm the GM as well. What would you like? Yeah, okay, I'll send you Russell Wilson for nothing. Anyway, Andy, do we just want to go straight into some predictions, or because Alice has just decided to leave?
Yeah, that's good by him asking you a question and not hanging around for the answer. I am excited to watch Audric Estime. Really loved the physicality of him as a running back out of Notre Dame, and some of the he's unleashing the hit stick, trucking guys out of the backfield. It's a weird one. Lloyd Cushenberry, and this speaks volumes to how Denver did have or have had a track record of drafting, and you know, out of college it was sort of so-so as to how Cushenberry would grow in the NFL, and he's turned into quite a serviceable center. So losing him, you got who? Luke Wattenberg taking over at center. It's a weird one. It's a real rebuilding. The Pontiac Bandit, Doug Jeudy, off to Cleveland as well. Look, I don't know. It's a little Brooklyn 99 for you.
Love it.
So I don't know. I think it's an odd patch of rebuilding for Denver, and I'm gonna enjoy watching Sean Payton choke through it for sure. I'll dish out my predictions. I think we've got them first. Away we go to Mile High the week after the bye. As I predicted, I think we're gonna cop a little bit of a stinger at home to the Chiefs in week four. We'll come out after the bye feeling fresh. Hopefully, if Herbert has been playing through any kind of foot issue for the first month, he's all feeling good by week six. We come out and smoke him at Mile High, and then week 16, we're really hitting our straps. So we go 2-0 against the Denver Broncos.
All right, yep. I'll jump
Me
in.
Too.
2-0 for you as well, Jack?
Correct.
I have 1-1, so I think we lose the first one at Mile High and then win the home game in week 16. Alex?
Do you guys know when the last time the Chargers won a game at Mile High is?
Oh, no, but I'm interested.
2018.
Wow.
That was the last time they won a game in Denver. They should have won the Drew Lock game back in 2020, threw that one away. I'll go bold though. I think they win in Denver this year, and then I think they win in LA. So I'll say 2-0.
Love it.
He's on. That Caribbean spirit, baby. All right, cool. So we got what? 3 2-0s and a 1-1. Not bad, not bad. Al, you're predicting a little bit of a rut, a little bit of a mid-season rut for the Chargers.
Yeah.
Yeah?
That's right. I think I have us 3-3 in the division.
Not bad. Yeah, 4-2 for me. Not too bad. All right. Well, look, we're about to hit the hour, so I think it's a perfect time to jump into the Aussie quiz. Jack, do you want to kick us off with your question for our lovely guest today?
Sure. There's no costume change for this one, Alex. Given that we're watching the Olympics, I thought I'd whack in an Olympic question. So hopefully you've been brushing up and watching a lot of the games. The Americans do a little sneaky thing with their medal tally to say that they put themselves on top for total medals won, but then they don't count the golds. Of course, the Americans are very, very far on top now. But the Aussies doing okay. I think we're third on the gold medal tally.
For, best ever effort.
Yeah, best a nation effort. Of... A nation of 25 million people. Anyway, here we go. We're going back to 1956 in the Melbourne Olympic Games. Which Olympic tradition was introduced at said games in 1956 that still continues to the present day? You've got four options. The first option is athletes from all nations enter the stadium in unity during the closing ceremony. Option B, the Olympic flame burning from the start of the games to the closing ceremony. Option C, athletes marching into the stadium behind their nation's flags during the opening ceremony, or D, the torch relay for the Olympic flame. Which one of those was introduced in Melbourne in the 1956 Olympic Games?
Ooh. Torn between C and D here. I actually don't know when the torch relay started. That's like my thing here, because I remember... When I was a kid, yeah, I was like Muhammad Ali did it in like Atlanta, but I don't remember when the history of that started. I'll I'll go with D.
D. And weirdly enough, and I didn't know this until I looked at it, is that in 1956 was the first time that athletes from all nations entered the stadium in unity during the closing ceremony. That had never happened before. Many of them used to go home after their events, and the closing ceremony was a bit of a non-event. So 1956, there we go.
All right. Okay. I had an Olympics question as well. But I'm not going to do that because we know now he's not unlocking the bonus. I'm going to go with something a bit more fun. So, Alex, Australia is home, as we all know, to some of the world's most dangerous animals. Which of these animals killed the most Australians in 2023? Five options. Is it sharks, spiders, box jellyfish, snakes, or crocodiles?
Can you repeat the answers one more time? Sorry. Yes, I wanted to fine. I googled what animal killed Steve Irwin because I didn't totally remember. Okay, stingray was not an option. The answer choices?
Yes, the choices are sharks, spiders, box jellyfish, snakes, or crocodiles.
The answer is, so the question was, who, what animal killed the most people?
Yes, last year.
I'll go with snakes.
Close, but no cigar. Snakes came in second with three deaths. Actually, sharks killed the most with four. Mm. And last was there was spiders. No Australian deaths from a spider confirmed since 1979. There you go. Those anti-venoms are working well. All right, Andy, come on. Let's get him off the schneid. We need to send him home on a positive note.
That's not what I've anticipated. As a well-travelled man, Alex, this one might appeal to you. The city of Melbourne in Victoria, where Alistair and I live and Jack hails from too, has the largest population of which nationality outside of Europe? Is it A, French, B, Italian, C, German, or D, Greek?
So French, Italian, German, or Greek? Gonna go with the French. You left French. Me in suspense there. I thought like, oh, is there a different sound for getting it right? And then I was like, oh.
I was very nonchalant with my button pressing and I almost hit something that was completely irrelevant. I could have completely ruined the whole show. No, it is in fact Greek. A lot of migrants in the 50s and 60s came over and we love them for the late nights of larkies. So thank you very much to the Greeks. Oh, well, mate, 0 from 3, as promised, the latest victim of the TDU Aussie quiz. But on that note, I hope you've had fun with us because it's been awesome having you on the show. Some in-person insight and very knowledgeable guy, lover of charges and all things associated. So, look, lots to get excited about with preseason week one coming up. No doubt we'll get you on again some other time to talk things Chargers football, man. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, happy to join you guys.
No worries. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in. Football's almost here. We'll Woo! See you next time on the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast.
Bye.
Bye.
Firing, he's got Floyd turning, got it, 6 and 10, 5, high step, touchdown, San Diego!
Woo! Good night to all!